I'm David S. Dawson from The Intellectual Podcast, a show that spotlights creatives from all walks of life, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other incredibly geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
Capes on the Couch podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Dr. Issues is a psychiatrist, but he is not your psychiatrist and does not have knowledge of your individual situation. For any personal mental health concerns, please consult your own healthcare providers. For medical emergencies, please call 911 or the designated number in your area immediately. Remember that you are not alone and help is out there.
Hello and welcome to Capes on the Couch, where comics get counseling. I'm Anthony Sitko.
And I'm Dr. Issues.
This is issue 157, and in conjunction with the upcoming Black Adam film, we are going to be talking Dr. Fate. And if you're saying to yourself, but Anthony, Dr. Fate doesn't come out until next week, you would be correct. I screwed up the calendar. So I had initially planned for this to come out the week of Black Adam, and then when I was putting the episode list together, somehow I switched this in Gambit, which is fine. Just gives me another week to work on the Cajun accent that I'm going to attempt for the video. And I guarantee it will be better than what I just said.
No promises.
I'm going to do my level best, y'all. I promise I will. So real quick, before we get started, if you are not already a patron, you should definitely go to patreon.com/capesonthecouch and subscribe there. I'm not trying to hawk too much, but we have got some good stuff coming for patrons in the next few weeks in terms of bonus content and episodes that will only be available for patrons for at least a very, very long time. We may at some point put them on the main feed, but we're going to give you the good. You know, in other words, Anthony Sitko is your hookup. Holla if you hear me.
Nice.
So if you are a patron, there is a 141 2/3% chance that you are going to hear some amazing content coming to your Patreon feed in the next couple of weeks.
Oh man, I think you're amazing because those types of references are so niche that you have to have a cross-genre understanding to really get everything you can out of this show. And I hope we're encouraging that.
Absolutely. Well, he was just trending not that long ago on Twitter because somebody decided to throw videos of him doing all kinds of incredible moves.
He ain't getting up from that one.
I'm talking young Scott Steiner.
Oh, I'm well aware. I'm talking about the first time he busted out the Steiner screwdriver. Or literally looked like he just dropped a guy on his head, but it was clear that he caught him midstream. Like, I'm not aware a person could do that, but whatever.
Yeah, Scott Steiner in the Michigan headgear days with Rick was just this amazing combo of speed and size. He was Brock Lesnar before Brock Lesnar. But I digress. That's for Travis and the Wrestle Special to have on a separate discussion. One of these days, Travis will invite me on that show. Damn you, Travis. So, I kid. All love to Travis. So, Dr. Fate, Kent Nelson. There have been many characters to wear the mantle of Dr. Fate. He is a legacy character, but for the purposes of this episode, we are going to be discussing the OG Dr. Fate, Kent Nelson, created by Gardner Fox and Howard Sherman in More Fun Comics, number 55, May 1940, because apparently More Fun Comics was what you could get away with calling a book, as opposed to Fun Comics. Now, does that mean you have additional Fun Comics or comics that are even of a higher amount of fun than other comics? There's some syntax ambiguity in the title.
But does that imply that if you just have Fun Comics, was there a less fun comics? Or does that delve into more serious comics?
We could really go off on a tangent regarding the English language, but we digress, as we always do on this show. Kent Nelson is on an archaeological dig with his father, Sven, when they accidentally awaken an ancient Sumerian god, Nabu the Wise, and the chamber was filled with poisonous gas, which kills Sven. So Nabu pities Kent and trains him in magic for about 20 years before Kent returns to the U.S. and begins operating as a superhero. Now, I just want to pause there for a moment. He trained for 20 years. This is not some fly-by-night rookie superhero. 20 years. You never see that kind of commitment these days in comics. It's always, I got my powers. Cool. Let me go out and start kicking some ass. He trained. He studied. 20 years is a long damn time.
Let's make this clear. As a doctor, even with college, med school, residency, fellowship, you don't hit 20 years for that type of training. So,
no. Man. I'm an attorney. 3 years of law school. That was it. 20 years. 20 years. That is a seasoned vet. So wearing the helmet of Nabu and not the codpiece or the shin guard of Nabu, the helmet of Nabu, he gains incredible magic power, although it is revealed that Nabu is often in control of his body while he's wearing the helmet. He later creates a half helmet to regain greater control, although it does cost him some power. Now, he is one of the founding members of the original Justice Society of America in 1940, which predates the Justice League by quite some time. This was the first, hey, let's get these heroes together and put them on one team, coordinating efforts. This is a big crossover. This is a huge deal in 1940, this Justice Society of America. So Dr. Fate, again, one of the OGs, which is something that we're going to see in the upcoming Black Adam movie. We're going to see the Justice Society. We're going to see Dr. Fate. We're going to see Hawkman. We're going to see a couple of the other characters in the JSA. So very much looking forward to this. So after being one of the founding members of the JSA, he later retires and focuses on being a physician alongside his wife, Inza. So in the 1980s, Inza committed suicide, but Nabu wouldn't allow Kent to die until he found a successor, which he did. And we're not going to get into Eric Strauss and all the problems therein, at which point Nabu granted him peace and let him die. But since this is comics, nobody really stays dead. Kent and Inza are resurrected into younger bodies, and then Inza is actually operating as Dr. Fate for a time before the two battle Extant, who is a villain who rapidly ages Kent and Inza to their proper bodies. They find Jared Stevens, who becomes the new Dr. Fate, and Kent and Inza die and enter a dimension in Jared's amulet. And this is all, I want to say, mid-90s, this is happening. And so, basically, Kent and Inza have remained dead since then. I believe he was reanimated during Blackest Night for a time. It was a Black Lantern. Basically, everybody who was dead at that point got resurrected as a Black Lantern. But Kent Nelson has functionally stayed dead for the better part of 30 years. So that's the primary background we're going to give you on Kent Nelson. Again, we're not going to get into the other Doctor's Fate. Doctor's Fate, I believe, is the proper way to pluralize that. Okay.
Yep.
Proud of myself. So let's talk about the issues. And the theme here is the cost of magic. So the first issue we're going to discuss is the fact that Nabu is constantly controlling his body, that every time he wants to put on the helmet and utilize the powers, Nabu says, all right, you're going to sit down. I'm going to take over. I'll wake you up when this is all said and done. And we kind of saw this play out a little bit in the Moon Knight series where Mark would take over the body. Steven would essentially black out and come to and say, what's all this then? But in a different enough way, because here Kent was aware that Nabu's influence was going to ultimately take control.
Okay, so the very first thing with all of this, and maybe it's just me thinking this, but I think other people would as well, what sort of reality analog can you come up with this? Because at no point do we really have that level of mind control or whatever you want to say. The good news is you don't have to go that far. This is what humans go through when they are developing. You have no control over yourself for quite a while. Anthony is experiencing this right now with his children, and they're learning as they go along. I know I'm saying it in a funny way, but it's the truth. This is how human development happens. Someone is going to be doing things for you for a bit until you can do them for yourself. And either you're going to learn how to do them independently, or you're going to partially learn them and continue to retool what you need to know, hopefully with the guidance of someone in a safe but experimental way so that you can make some gentle mistakes rather than really, really large ones and get hurt. And unfortunately, there are some people that don't even get that opportunity because they may have certain things that are challenges for them. They could be physical challenges. They could be mental challenges. They can be things that make it very clear, not because of anyone's fault. I'm not going that far, but just because of random chance, someone else is going to have to do something for them physically. If you are not prepared for that, once you have your own personality, your own mindset, your own goals, your own motivations, then it can be a huge point of contention because, it could be a huge point of contempt because, in general, an adult individual wants to have autonomy, meaning they want to know that they can do the things that they want to do when they want to do them. Of course, there are negotiations about that with society as a whole. It's the reason why we call work work, as opposed to the idea that you do everything in a hedonistic style ad infinitum without any sense of consequence. But that doesn't mean that you want that with your basic toiletries. That doesn't mean that you don't want to be able to take a shower when you want. That doesn't mean you don't want to eat when you want, sleep when you want. Most things don't govern that. Once you get past the basic day, you know, that daytime period, I know there's always cultural differences, but that daytime period, yes, there may be things that you know you have to do for others. But after that, you're supposed to really navigate everything else on your own. Now imagine, and I'll admit, I'm speaking from the heart from this. What if you know for a fact a person isn't able to do that for themselves anymore because of dementia? What if there are things that you simply see that this person needs help with and that person is fighting you? I get this in my hospital all the time, and it's not a fun thing to go through. So, yeah, it's not that far off, even though we're putting it in the comic perspective. When someone doesn't have physical autonomy or mental autonomy at all times, then you can create a sense of helplessness, hopelessness, a sense of anger, a sense of hostility, all those things. They're all possibilities. With someone like Kent, though, what's the difference? Why don't we see that happen nearly as much? It's because these were contractual agreements. No, it may not be formally written out like an attorney would, but it was a social contract, as we do. Where for this particular situation, we have established that a person is going to do this for me in exchange for either survival or some other benefit in the future. The best example I can give for this, and it's something I won't do because I have no interest in doing it. If you've ever done skydiving, if you've ever jumped out of an airplane, the first one you do, heaven forbid, is in tandem. You have someone who's experienced doing it, and you are strapped to that person. A lot of people don't learn this until they actually sign up for it. You're not going alone. And by the way, when I say strapped to, I don't mean loosey-goosey, like one arm or something. No, the person is going to lift you with their body, and they're going to push you out of the plane. And I think this is really important, especially for now we're really getting close to the comic, because from what I understand, for people who have experienced it, the first jump that you do, the person will say, okay, we're going now on the count of three, one, two, they go on two, not on three. Why? Because the person is technically in front and they'll freeze often, and they don't want that freeze to happen. So while there are situations where you wish you had control and you don't, there are plenty of situations where you are thankful you don't have control. Once again, I'll bring it back to myself. When I was going through medical school and I thought I was going to be a surgeon, nobody wanted me cutting on them with no experience. I was there with a well-trained resident who was also under the supervision of a well-trained attending surgeon. They were the ones doing everything. They were the ones showing me the things that were very important. Be glad that someone else was in control, even though in theory, could I have gone completely rogue and just said, okay, I'm going to try for myself. No one does that. Even though no one was physically controlling my body, there was enough mental control there. And I mean that in a good way. There was enough respect for a system that had checks and balances that allowed for the well-being of people that were incapacitated. After all, they're under anesthesia. They can't do a thing. They are totally at your whim, at your mercy. So there's a lot of times, especially in, I'll be selfish and say in U.S. culture, where we want that individualism, and sometimes we take it to a certain potential extreme, but other cultures don't make, you know, don't go that far. There is a reason why it's okay sometimes to let someone else have control, because I know that's different than many times I've pointed it out in other episodes, but what I'm getting at is it doesn't have to be an all or nothing experience. We're all going to go through these points in life, and I'm here to let you know that it's okay.
That is incredible life advice, and I wasn't really sure at the beginning where you were going to go with that, especially with the skydiving metaphor, but I like how you tied it all back around at the end. And it's funny, sometimes I even feel that way about this show in the sense that you're the professional and I may be the one running the mixing board and the guy throwing in the pop culture references. And once in a great while, I'll have something intelligent to say. But without you here, this show wouldn't exist. You are the professional. You are the one that I'm strapped to, for lack of a better term, that is shoving us out of the airplane on two. Ha ha, fooled you on the way down. One, two. Yeah, but you're right in the sense that we do tend to take some of that individualism in this country to unhealthy places, shall we say. And collaboration and cooperation need to be given a good amount of, I don't want to say deference, but acknowledgement in society, because without it, we don't have a social contract. I mean, if you're the type of person to believe in social contract theory, I am. And I just, gosh, again, some of that individualism stuff can really be saved for another podcast. And so the idea of completely subsuming yourself in service of someone else is not good. The idea of doing what you want, consequences be damned, is not good. There has to be a middle ground somewhere, that Goldilocks zone, where everyone is allowed to live a life that they want to live in pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness and all that, but not at the expense of others. And when you come up to that border, that's where things have to be negotiated and or clearly defined. But again, that's a topic for sociology podcast or a political science podcast. This ain't that kind of show. So we will shift then to the second issue, which is the losses, plural, of INZA. And again, Kent has gone through his own fair share of loss, but INZA, again, trigger warning, did commit suicide in the 80s. I'm struggling to remember the exact causes behind it. I believe it had something to do with magical villain wreaking havoc. There was also some physical illness, I believe, that was present as well. I I read some of the back issues, and I pulled from other sources for the rest of the background. So I admittedly don't have a comprehensive understanding of the situation, but she did kill herself. And this obviously left Kent very distraught, to the point that now he wanted to die to be reunited with her. And Nabu said, nope, hold up, not yet. You have to find somebody to take your place. That is compounding the problem. And then they both get resurrected and then age and then they die again. It's a lot. It's very difficult, I would imagine, to lose a spouse once, never mind multiple times.
Yeah, I'm glad that you just said that, because there are so many ways that this can be taken. One is the literal, that let's say you were married, had a spouse, that spouse dies. You remarry, have another spouse, that spouse dies. Barring other philosophical views, and I'm not trying to disparage them, but if we're getting one go-round when it comes to life, those types of decisions that are meant to be long-lasting, usually you'd rather not have them cut short. We know that divorce happens, but that means that even if it wasn't mutual, then there at least is one party that says, I don't want this. It's one thing to say, I want to eliminate ties with you as my life partner. It's another thing to say, I'm looking to eliminate my existence. And so, of course, a show like this is going to talk about suicide. Of course, especially at a time like this, where this has been a big push recently with regards to suicide prevention. And if this is a topic that is triggering someone, I just want to point out that there's always support, there's always help. We point that out in our bumper. But to get back to actually what I'm going with this, there is a lot that can be done to process the death of a loved one. But there is nothing that replaces the idea that that person thought that life was not worth what you think it is for them. What that person has done with regards to suicide, especially if it's a spouse or significant other or close family member or close friend, is they've just detonated a pain bomb. They have managed to take pain and spread it to as many people as possible. And that can lead to some conflicting emotions, because of course you have the grief part, and we've talked about grief in many forms, but it also creates a mystery. Sometimes the person will leave clues, or maybe leave a complete path that's been walked, be it a note or other things, or this is something that's been ongoing in a chronic condition, and in which case it's something that's known, but often it's not. And in those situations, it becomes a battle as to how that mystery gets resolved. I'm not saying solved. Solved implies that there was something that was pre-contextual and therefore has a narrative that has to be finalized to end the story. That may not exist. The narrative that you tell yourself, that exists. And how you decide to emotionally process that narrative, that is crucial to all of this, because you can start to weave that story however you want to. And maybe comics is one of the best ways to do this. I think that there's a huge metaphor there to say you have to find a replacement before your life is over. I wouldn't necessarily go that literal. I would think it's more that this other person gave you a sense of purpose, a sense of meaning. If they're no longer there for whatever reason, what's next? How do you keep going? And we do see very commonly, regardless of if it's suicide or not, that if one spouse dies, that commonly the other spouse tends to die sooner and potentially even unexpectedly, even if there were no previous physiological cause. So we know there's that connection, whatever you want to call that. But it doesn't have to be that way. I don't want to make it sound all doom and gloom. The whole point is there is another path. There is one of acknowledging that this person, for all we know, and I'm leaving this as possibilities, okay? Because I know everybody walks their path, that this person had such a tumultuous journey that they were fighting every step of the way to make it as powerful as it could be. And for one reason or another, it has concluded. The fact that they were willing to travel such a jagged road, such a rocky road, allowed for yours to potentially not have as many rocks and as many things in the future, because they showed you a different way. Not the way that you wanted, not the way you intended, but the way it is now. And it leaves unfortunate opportunities. I say unfortunate because suicide, in my opinion, is something that is always painful. But there's still that hope for those that remain. And if it's possible to take the perspective that the person that's now at rest, yes, they spread pain, but they also spread information. Information about what this world can do if a person is having difficulties and has no way out or thinks they have no way out. So as a typical call, just nothing eloquent about it. Just if at any point you're feeling that way, please don't be embarrassed. Please don't be ashamed. Please just let someone close to you know. And they may be ham-fisted about it. They may be awkward, or they may be gentle. They may be gracious. They may be angry, whatever it is. I don't know how the person on the other side of it's going to react, but I can tell you that it is usually from a place of love. I don't want people to manipulate this and think, oh, and believe me, I do get this with patients. They feel like the only way they get attention is by pointing out thoughts of life not being worth it. I don't want to romanticize that. But I do want to say that when someone is asking for attention, there's a good chance it's because they want attention. Don't drop that just for the sake of saying, I'm worried about how it looks or how other people may think. For anybody that's lost a spouse, I can't speak for myself. I can't. But I can speak for someone, and for all I know, he's listening to this episode because he does once in a while. I have a role model now in terms of how to navigate these things. And I can tell you that when you have truly done everything you can for someone at the end of life, and you can be at peace with that, things truly can become brighter.
Beautifully said. And as someone who has been on the receiving end of two phone calls from two separate individuals related to thoughts of suicide, or at least idealizing it, it is nerve-wracking. It is stressful. I'm not going to even pretend that it's not, to get a call from two of your friends saying that they are very, very low is not a situation I would wish upon anyone, but it beats getting a phone call that they're not there anymore. I would much rather receive a phone call from a friend saying, hey, I'm in a bad place and I could use some help talking me out of it, than a phone call from another friend saying so-and-so isn't around anymore. I will take that 6 days a week and twice on Sundays without even hesitating. So yes, we do remind everyone that you are not alone and help is out there. It may sound trite, but it's in our bumper for a reason. It's in our disclaimer for a reason, because it's the truth. And if you are in the Discord, you have access to the RTS bot, thanks to our friends over at Guardians MH. There is a new 3-digit number. What is it? What's the new number?
988.
988 is the new suicide prevention hotline number. There are resources available there to help you with that. And there are also resources available for the survivors. If someone does unfortunately choose to go through with it, there are copious amounts of resources available for friends and relatives who have lost someone to suicide. And I think just in general, grief counseling is very helpful. Even the second time that Inza passed, which wasn't suicide related. It was just they got aged instantaneously. Grief counseling can be incredibly helpful to address the loss. I just posted in the Discord not that long ago. It was posted several years ago on Reddit. It was a quote from an older Redditor, and it was about grief comes in waves. And it's been widely spread around the internet that the first couple times you get hit with the wave, it knocks you down, you're sputtering, you don't know how to deal with it. And over time, the waves come further and further apart, and they're smaller, and you can see them coming, so you can prepare yourself. It's a beautiful sentiment, and it's the truth that we all experience loss in various ways throughout our life, whether it's grandparents, other, you know, older relatives, could even be not older relatives. Grief comes in many forms, and so we all experience it as part of the human condition. And I think that capacity to acknowledge grief and loss in others and the empathy that comes with that is something that is in short supply, frankly, in our society. And I think we need to be reminded of it from time to time when we're dealing with other people. Speaking of loss and things of that nature, I'm always reminded of the quote from Michelle McNamara, the late wife of Patton Oswalt, who said, "It's chaos, be kind." And there again, Patton Oswalt was able to turn a horrific tragedy into a story, into to his own way of healing and his own way of dealing with things. And so I'm always reminded of that quote, that life is chaos, be kind. If we could just carry that with us every day and in all of our interactions with others, especially strangers, we might be able to turn a corner. I say might, but on any given day, I may or may not be more pessimistic than others. So now that we went really, really dark, we're still going to get heady, but I think this is going to be a little bit lighter in terms of tone. So the third one isn't really an issue. It's just something that Doc and I were kicking around while we were discussing this. And Doc has a lot of thoughts on this question. So the question is really, what's really the point of magic?
All right. So I'm going to peel back the curtain a little bit on this. We like to do three issues for each episode. So those of you that are new to this, yes, that is the pattern. But sometimes we only come up with two that are truly directly with the character, which means Doc gets to go off the rails. And hopefully it's entertaining to you. It's always cathartic to me. So, hey, just come along for the ride. When I mention magic, I think of a few things. I think first of the stereotype of the person that is on stage that is doing what are considered tricks, because we know that there are certain things that are not considered possible in reality. And yet when we see someone do those things that are considered impossible, we get the endorphin release because we think now that things that are impossible have just become possible, even if it's for that small moment. And then there are us jerks, and I include myself in that jerk category, where it has nothing to do with that. It's how did that MF-er do it? And you are trying. And I remember doing this as a little kid, because sometimes these magic specials would come on TV, and I would either hope that they would get replayed or I'd record them, because I wanted to slow down the tape and pause it to see where the sleight of hand was, if it was with cards, if it was with whatever, just to say, where is that little thing that I'm missing that you're hiding or distracting me from so I could expose it? Not because I wanted the person to get in trouble, but because I wanted to understand. And that's the part that always motivated me, because I think I think that way about life. I think that there are so many things, be it interpersonal interactions, relationships, or if you want to get into the idea that things happen and you weren't there and you're trying to understand what happened after the fact, mysteries, all sorts of different things where I just want to get to that inner truth. And the fact that there is some person, and I'm saying person because this is important, there is someone that is intentionally blocking that ability because they want that sense of control, bringing it back to the very first issue. That's what magic can be on the surface. Now let's get into something that's a bit deeper than that, a bit more spiritual. Because for the longest time with human existence, longer than what we now in modern society think about, there was this idea that we knew that there were things that we had no control over, and therefore we had to assign something, whatever that was, that truly was in control, and we were coming along for the ride. And how we describe that, if we had no other vocabulary or understanding, essentially falls into the category of magic. It just is. Something that we don't know about, that we don't understand, we'll just ascribe in a different way, and that's comforting. So I don't know why rain happens, but rain falls down and we get wet, but it also allows for crops to grow and everything. Okay. Why does that happen and sometimes we get droughts instead? Why do we get floods? Why is it not perfectly regulated and controlled? Well, that's not up to us. It must be something else. Now we do have other ways to explain it, but it still doesn't get to the heart of the idea of we don't control that at all. I'm just giving that as a very basic example. We know fully well how deep this goes. Every one of us has these types of thoughts, and that's fine. That's what we do. But do you notice how I'm coming at this from two different angles? On one hand, it's us creating illusions of things that we want people to think and expand our minds, while other people are trying to expose how in reality there's something much different going on. Meanwhile, on the other end, you have a lot of things that we know almost nothing about, but we keep trying to get bits and pieces here and there via space missions, telescopes, deep sea expeditions, the exploration that we've done, the experiments that we do with our own bodies, the things that we have to learn about in terms of fighting off disease, all these other things that sometimes we ascribe to something we don't understand, but we know has to be omnipotent, while other people are saying that we're going to slowly chip away at this, and I hope it's not offending you. Those two sides are part of the same coin. And I think that as long as we keep that knowledge in balance, then we don't have to have the deep, I mean, truly deep dissonance that I see on a regular basis with some people when they're trying to deal with the idea of the existence of God or religion, or people that are even delusional saying that they are a higher power themselves, even when they still have a physical form, while not criticizing people that point out that there was someone that had a physical form and is God. None of this has to be as controversial or as threatening or as painful as we make it out to be. There are people that follow the idea of being Wiccans, the idea that, you know, there are things that still are supernatural. The, you know, nature religion itself, the concept of spirituality, Buddhism, Hinduism, all these things, the idea that things within our world can manifest as spiritual things that allow us to have a better existence. The idea that maybe our whole point is to be completely different and have a different plane of existence that either when we die, we're going to go to, or even when we're on the planet, it's all going to end with us when we die. Either way, I'm totally open about this. So to get back to the original question, what's the point of magic? I think it's just the idea that it allows our minds to go places that we wouldn't otherwise. And it sure as hell makes the world more fun.
Well, given that magic makes the world more fun, but if you're talking about whether to use that as a corollary for higher power, religion, God, deity, whatever you want to call it, how many people have been murdered and slaughtered and invaded in the name of a particular deity over the course of the entirety of human history? I don't know that I would necessarily qualify that as fun, but the idea of someone maybe shooting sparkles from their fingertips, yeah, no, that's kind of cool. I always would watch those same magic shows. David Copperfield was big. I mean, we're dating ourselves in terms of age, but David Copperfield always had those big TV specials when I was younger, and whether it was, okay, I'm going to put the cards on the screen and I'll know which one you end up with, et cetera, or making the Statue of Liberty disappear, or all kinds of things. Yeah, magic is fun. That's why I like Penn and Teller, because they show you how they're going to do it. They show you what they're doing. They break it down for you. And in the meantime, they've done something completely different, because showing you the misdirection in and of itself is misdirection. And it's just beautiful on a meta level. Yeah, magic is cool. So we're going to take a break, plug a couple of shows, and when we get back, we'll get into treatment. Stay tuned.
Hey there, I'm Chris from the Geek Peak Podcast, here with my two co-hosts, Trent.
What up?
And Brandon.
Yo, yo.
Here at the Geek Peak, we strive to provide you the best content from all across the pop culture multiverse.
Think of us as your content concierge, seeking out all the best movies, TV, games, and music to save your valuable time.
We have a different adult beverage every week, and we like to keep things light and fresh, so come hang out with us.
So check us out on all your favorite podcasting platforms. That's Geek Peak.
Like a mountain!
And check out our site at geekpeakpod.com.
Everybody has a story, and not all of those stories are clear black and white issues, even when we think they are. We wonder, how did this happen? Or what is that like? Or what happens next? Are you sure you really want to know? This is Ignorance Was Bliss at IWB Podcast.
Hi, I'm Saladin Ahmed, and this is Capes on the Couch.
And now we're going to get into treatment. Starting as we always do with in-universe, Doc, how are you going to help Doc?
That's kind of the point. Am I helping Doc? See, the problem is, who am I viewing as the patient? And spoiler alert, this kind of gets to a little bit of the skit, but Kent is really trying to survive everything that's happened to him, and he does a decent job of handling so much stuff. Can we work on this on this Naboo person? Because it seems like too often when it comes to mental health, to psychiatry, we are very focused on the individual, and I respect that. But since we're in universe, and I can go ahead and do things in comics that I wouldn't do in our world as it's constructed, I really want to go to the heart of it. And I would really want to see if I could get a session with Naboo himself and just try and figure out, even as a god, like kind of relating to what we just talked about with that last issue, are you really sure just kind of delving into that one person and giving them all that ability and everything and channeling all that? Are you sure you can go, you know, do you have to go about it that way? Is there another way? Can we start to humanize a little bit without getting into the human, you know? And leave Kent alone just for a while so that he can be just a regular dude. I really want to see if I could go that route. I have no idea where it would take me, but I basically would say, like, you know what? I think there's misdirection here with the patient. I think we got to get the right person on the couch or whatever that would be.
Interesting. And now having hear you explain it, I can't really say I see the fault in it. I'm not entirely certain how you would begin to provide treatment to a lord of consequence, but good on you for trying. So out of universe, I would equate an analog with an older individual. We can incorporate the Inza thing, obviously, who has perhaps been dealing with some undue influences over the course of their professional life. And it's brought them great professional fame, but personally has created some issues with them in terms of maybe interpersonal communication. I don't quite exactly know how to provide an out-of-universe analog for this, but maybe you have some suggestions.
So if you're talking about, I kind of hesitate because once again, nobody that we mention as a real person in the world, they may exist, but we, meaning me, I am not treating any one person based on public knowledge or anything of the sort. I have no knowledge of anyone's individual situation, just as a major spoiler here. But if you're talking about someone who does have certain requirements for assistance, because that was the first issue, who has, in theory, let's say they have some serious disabilities and also has gone through significant loss, although in one area they have had significant success. And so on one hand, they get held, and we've seen this plenty of times, a person gets held up as like this beacon of everything that's considered good in the world. Meanwhile, they're saying like, I've had some serious tragedy happen in my life and I don't need everybody saying that to me. I just need someone to help me with this other stuff. That actually is pretty common. And to be honest with you, that's something that outpatient providers see a lot because we're the ones that they go to because they can't let down their guard for anybody else. You know, and I'm doing my best not to name names. I mean, there have been people, for example, that have had tragedies in terms of be it motor vehicle accidents or things, end up paralyzed, and yet they have foundations. They do wonderful things, but it doesn't change the fact that for one reason or another, their life was completely altered and it was out of their control. It was an accident or whatever. Maybe it might have been an attack. You know, maybe someone was trying to rob them, whatever. My point is there are a lot of variations on it. It doesn't have to be one particular person. But the whole point of all of that is you end up with a situation where, congratulations, you have created purpose for your life. But all that other stuff still remains messy. How do you parse that out? How do you deal with, as Anthony so eloquently put it, the waves that come either with grief for yourself or if it is with the loss of others, you know? And there is no one right answer for this. It's a matter of what techniques do you still use? Because what I think ends up happening is, I'm trying to think of the right term for it. I don't think there's a professional term for it because it's not extinguished, but it's fatigue. It's coping mechanism fatigue. The idea that you have used the same coping mechanism for years, decades even, and while you've become known to do that, and everyone knows that when you, let's say, are going on a nature hike or something, on a trip, I should say, especially if you have limitations. But the point is you're traveling and everybody knows that's your mechanism for coping. And it's like, well, I've done that so long. Like, that doesn't have the same effect that it used to. And then the person starts to potentially think like, oh, well, then what's wrong with me? Getting back into some of the potential negative thoughts that they had previously when they were first dealing with the grief or the change or the loss, whatever. And it's the therapist's responsibility not to tell the person, okay, just keep doing what you're doing, or to say, all right, come up with some brand new ones. We'll do whatever is necessary to accommodate those things, with the other person still being in charge because they've demonstrated that they can still be in charge of their life. There is one part, though, that becomes really scary, and that is from a professional standpoint, if we've noticed that there's enough of a change that the person isn't as much in control as they used to be. And that's when some really difficult discussions happen. Is there someone else that we can contact for you? Is there someone you would like to be notified of our sessions? And we have to find a way to, I don't want to say skirt around. It's not skirting around. It's just making sure that the person starts taking the hint that there may be some transitions that you don't want to happen that are going to happen because we notice that you may need extra help with things that you didn't need before, even though you may have overcome this original barrier. So all those things taken into consideration, along with monitoring to make sure if there's ever been medication management, that that's not playing a role and all those other things. But really, it's more along the lines of you've definitely had some self-fulfillment despite tragedy. That doesn't mean that the pain has just been eliminated. And how do we help it so that it just gradually gets less and less over time, hopefully? And what do we do when things spike up?
When you were having the discussion regarding the coping mechanism fatigue and how it wasn't working, the first thing that frankly popped into my head was substance abuse and how, in many cases, folks continue to use the substances in higher doses and greater amounts and things of that nature because it's no longer as effective. And the same can be said, to your point, for coping mechanisms or other things that may not necessarily be destructive in and of themselves, but the effect still doesn't work like it used to. It's worn off. You've grown numb to it. You've grown accustomed to it. It doesn't hit those dopamine receptors in the same way. That's a common thing for folks with ADHD, that you have to go from thing to thing because you hyper-focus on the whatever it is until you've worn it out so much that it no longer brings you any joy. So you have to move to the new thing because you're constantly chasing that high, constantly chasing that thrill. So the idea of anything, as you said, like a coping mechanism becoming less effective over time, I think is a very understandable and relatable concept, if nothing else. But definitely the idea that you need to constantly shift, and I don't want to say evolve, but you need to maintain a certain level of self-awareness. And it's when that self-awareness drops or becomes hazardously low, to your point, is really when a lot of problems start, because you don't even recognize all the things that are happening to you, around you, by you. And that's no fun for you or anyone else, as we are all painfully aware. So with all of that being said, we got really deep in this episode, unexpectedly. I suppose it was preordained. It was kismet. So let us see what happens when we get Dr. Fate, Kent Nelson, on Dr. Issues' couch.
Hello, Kent. I'm Dr. Issues.
Hello, Doctor.
So what can I help you with?
I should be able to tell you that.
What does that mean?
Well, you're aware of my condition.
Ah, that name. It's a bit on the nose, isn't it?
You're one to talk.
I've always wanted to be on the other end for once. Forgive me.
As much as it may amuse you, I'll admit I'm not much for small talk.
Neither am I, usually. For some reason, I'm a bit more loose than usual, and I don't even know you. That's telling. I'm not sure what, though.
I'm used to others obfuscating their motives for some other time, but not when they consider themselves an ally. Is there something you're looking to avoid?
This isn't supposed to be about me. The longer we talk about my own mindset, the less time we have to address yours. So to get back to your original point, no, I don't want anything about my future.
Phew. Well, I suppose it's good that I don't have to put on the helmet then.
Wait, were you purposely flipping to questions on me because you thought I'd want that?
Well, it's what most people want. They think magic is part of a whimsical show. But the realms of gods are deadly serious. Whimsical ask for lottery numbers leads to the knowledge that their cousin will soon fall ill. Tears of joy, tears of sorrow. They all stain the face the same.
How morbid.
Again, from what I know of you, you're casting stones from a glass house.
Gallows humor is a well-known defense mechanism. I know where mine comes from. What about yours?
I never implied humor. You have your own lens to view the world. I tend towards stoicism. Face reality for what it is, and it will never harm you.
Then you're also aware that reality can bring wonderment, enthusiasm, passion as well. I mean, I think your helmet is your way of physically manifesting a protection from the worst, but it may also limit your best.
Well, the civilizations that have been saved would disagree.
I'm sure they disagree. Do you?
What if I told you it's not me? Well, not all me.
I've done this enough times to take a hint. Who then? Is it safe to tell?
You're going to think I'm crazy, that I have multiple personalities or something
that? No labels. Please, it's too quick to cast such judgments, and I never use that kind of language. Heck, I've even had sessions with someone who deals with ancient gods granting power in exchange for loyalty.
And to think I assumed I had a unique scenario.
Oh, you have got to be kidding! Magnets draw metal because they are strong. Magnets draw metal because they are strong. Sorry, I have a mantra I use to recenter myself. Every situation is a new opportunity to enhance a mystical being's attitude, psyche, aura? I don't know what the proper terms are.
You know, this might be forward, but it's clear to me that you have only been on the receiving end of magical influence. You are hindered by what is instinctually unfamiliar. I may have a way to assist your comprehension.
Cool. I enjoy reading new things as long as, you know, there's a decent English translation.
Well, the process is not done through theory alone. I may not cast spells on myself, but if I know that it will be used on another...
Whoa. I've spent my career telling people to limit their use of a surrogate, and you're inviting me to jump in? Nope. No way.
The best analog I can think of is guided meditation, Doctor.
Safe word is screwdriver. Got it?
If you say so. This is a facsimile of my own helmet, since you wouldn't be able to wear my own. You'll have an opportunity for just a piece of my existence.
Ugh. My head. It's like a 3D game set fire to my eyes.
That is clarity beyond typical sight. If you are not of pure mind, then your soul will be destroyed in a matter of seconds. You have bent your mortal form to the winds of Naboo for the good of the universe. This is no small sacrifice.
I'm not dying? I figure he just tricked me to knock me out or something.
Kent Nelson and his wife have long been sacrificial lambs for the world. You are joining esteemed company, if that is any consolation. Indeed, you appear to have an unwavering motivation to aid those around you, but you must let go of your modest approach.
Oh, wow. I can really help here. You've been ignored for too long.
That is absurd. No one has ignored a Lord of Order without consequence.
Oh, I think you're underestimating your vulnerability. You've too often neglected kindness for weakness. Act after long delays because of impulse. I can do something that no one else has offered. I can listen.
I have traveled for eons, battled entities that have no name, and even at your minuscule level, guided the pharaohs for centuries. What makes you any different from the countless visceral vessels I've utilized through epics of the unknown?
Try me. Tell me all of the frustrations you've had since existence, and I'll be right there with every word you say.
Sometimes, I really miss Celia. That's the home world. Well, we were around well before the world, of course. But, you have to start somewhere, right? Anyway, the fellow lords are way more petty than you can imagine.
One eternity later.
And that's why human ears have a tragus.
Wow! Huh. I haven't used that term since medical school anatomy class. This is amazing.
I've been trying to demonstrate the futility of human history, and yet you still stand there enraptured. What manner of magic are you sourcing? I've never been in the presence of such patient warmth.
Told you so.
I only know of scripture that describes human life lasting this long.
What?
You have been listening to me for, well, in your terms, it would be millennia.
What? My life, my family, I didn't mean...
Oh man, I can't believe you fell for that. I had a temporal spell cast.
Oh, thank God. So it's only been like, what, felt like 2 or 3 hours maybe?
No, it was millennia. I just protected you outside of time itself. I'll place you back into your office in your own time as soon as you use the helmet. Oh. You know, that really was worthwhile. Kent shall know of your ability to help him. For now, I shall leave you to your devices.
Good, because I've had enough of your... Oh, my God!
Oh, good, you're back. I hope you don't mind. I called for dinner while you were preoccupied. I hope you like spring rolls. Thanks for saving the world, by the way.
I just listened to the voice of the universe, and you're talking about me saving the world in spring rolls?
Oh, yeah, that's the prototype half helmet I had a while ago. I didn't remember anything Naboo did, but he had carte blanche. On the other end, though, he would yell at me and said I just complained a lot. But I guess you two got along better, huh? You even had this ominous, I am Dr. Issues voice, and you cast some spells I never knew existed. You got a whole terrorist cell to surrender and do community service to boot.
Did I have a cool uniform?
It's not really my style. It was too much of a black and blue theme. Plus, you destroyed any photo or video instantaneously.
That sounds like something I'd do. Anyway, I don't know how to tell you this, but I don't think I can...
I have my other helmet. I'm good. Say no more. I really wanted Naboo to get the help anyway. Maybe now he'll show some more respect because you proved humanity's worth it in a different way. Keep it. If he wants another session, trust me, he'll let you know. Farewell, Doctor.
Wait! Oh my God! Oh my God! I really could have asked about Mega Millions!
I opted not to try to go for a Brosnan accent there. I just, you know, he's Bond, at least to me, my generation. He's James Bond.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't want to try and replicate that. I just opted to go for generic older man. So you fought crime for 1,000 years and you came back. It didn't even have the decency to place a lottery ticket or make a stock investment.
Man, you know,
it's a missed opportunity.
I know. It's like, for some reason, my own personal code of ethics decided that we needed to survive and exist and hopefully live in a better place as opposed to me balling out. Oh, well.
Money over everything, man. Get that paper.
Well, it depends. I mean, you could either say money, power, respect, but, you know, there's also more money, more problems. So.
Goodness knows we don't need flashy jackets and a fisheye lens. So, recommended reading for this episode is Dr. Fate Volume 2. Although it is primarily about the Strausses, Kent Nelson does feature heavily in many stories. And the reason why I'm recommending Dr. Fate Volume 2 is because really the best place to read Dr. Fate stories would be the OG stories, but it's not often that you can find reprints of those original 80-year-old comics. So for something a little more accessible, I would say Dr. Fate Volume 2. You still get Kent Nelson and Inza, but it's in a simpler form, shall we say. So upcoming episodes, Gambit, Mystique, and Poison Ivy. So again, I get an opportunity to work on my Cajun, and then I will be sitting it out for 2 weeks because I'm not playing Mystique and I'm not going to play Ivy. Although I thought about trying to maybe do a Lake Bell from the Harley Quinn series because she's got kind of that huskiness to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Maybe if I play with it, we'll see. We'll see. I'm also trying to work on getting a guest for the Ivy episode. We'll see how that pans out. As always, you can find all of our episodes on our website, capesonthecouch.com. You can also find us on the Gonna Geek website, gonnageek.com, where you can check out our show as well as a host of other amazing and fantastic geeky shows like Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Just wrapping up the coverage we've been doing on the She-Hulk series. That's been a lot of fun talking with SP and Chris and Lauren and Michelle, providing some insight as a lawyer on the legal representation within the show. The representation of the law, not the legal representation. I realize as I said it, as like legal representation technically means something different. The presentation and the accuracy of the law, of which there has been, I've seen better. I'll put it that way. I don't even practice the law full time. And even I'm going, Yeah, that's wrong. Nope. I move for a bad court thingy. Yeah. Yeah. It's, they're not quite as bad as Lionel Hutz, but sometimes they get scarily close to it. As we mentioned at the top of the show, we're going to have lots of great stuff coming for the patrons. So if you go to patreon.com/capesonthecouch, where you can follow the links in the show notes, you can subscribe there. $1, $3, or $5 a month unlocks a whole host of content. The stuff that we've got coming up will be for all of the patrons. So even if you're subscribed at just the $1 level, you will still be able to have access to some of the bonus content that we've got coming up, which, again, I'm very excited about. And specifically as it relates to Black Adam, Doc and I have been discussing something pretty cool that is just going to be for the patrons. So again, check it out. And for those of you who are already there, as always, a gracious, gracious thank you. We, as always, do appreciate the support, as all of the episodes we have coming up have been selected by our present level patrons. So looking forward to some of those topics. If you like what you hear and you want to get some more stuff, you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Keeps on the Couch. Got some cool stuff. I'm mostly active on Twitter. We also have a Discord server. If you are a Discord person and you have an account, links in the show notes, you can join the fan community. We've been talking about TV, movies, some big announcements lately in the world of film and television. You can go and join our discussions there. And I'm sure once Black Adam comes out, we will have something there as well to discuss. So that's going to wrap it up for me, Doc.
You know, usually I get nervous when we do episodes ahead of time because I really worry that we're going to connect to the audience or not. This time I had no doubt whatsoever because it was determined by fate.
And there you have it for Doc Issues. I'm Anthony Sitko. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Capes on the Couch podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Dr. Issues is a psychiatrist, but he is not your psychiatrist and does not have knowledge of your individual situation. For any personal mental health concerns, please consult your own healthcare providers. For medical emergencies, please call 911 or the designated number in your area immediately. Remember that you are not alone and help is out there.